houses. Is it so small a thing to have enjoyed the sun, to have lived light in the spring, to have loved, to have thought, to have done? Matthew Arnold. Blackthorn blossom decorated every lane this week. It was late March and the best time to spot the difference between hawthorn and blackthorn. Blackthorn trees blossom before their leaves appear, while hawthorn does it the other way round. We use many cues to connect what we see with the seasons. Fairy lights at Christmas, for example. And making a conscious effort to be observant each week was building a richer natural calendar in my mind than I'd ever had before. I hope next year I will instinctively think, ah, blossom season, and that hedgerow is blackthorn, not hawthorn. It must be late March. Now I heard the year's first chiff-chaff chirping away, a call like a tiny blacksmith hammering an anvil all day long. Chiff-chaff, chiff-chaff. It is easily confused with the great tits, teacher, teacher, chirp. Not many people get excited by a little brown bird with a monotonous song, but I enjoyed celebrating a feisty 6-gram bird that had flown all the way here from Africa. I was becoming aware of so many things that had passed me by in all my decades alive. The sense of amazement was boosted by small new abilities such as distinguishing a chiff-chaff from a great tit by their songs. I arrived in today's grid square down a busy road, cars swooping back and forth that demanded all my concentration. A workman battered the pavement with a pneumatic drill, and I had to turn off the road onto a quiet street of new houses before I could quieten my mind and settle into the slow rhythm of exploring. Just a stone's throw from the railway station, this cul-de-sac was prime real estate for wealthy people commuting into the city. The homes were huge, with oversized cars parked outside. But all this bigness came at the expense of any outdoor space. They had squeezed 10 identical buildings onto a plot of land that would have been the size of one garden for a home like this in earlier times. This tug between houses and space was to be a recurring theme on today's ride. I waited for an old lady to pass on her squeaky mobility scooter, then rode behind the station into a neighbourhood of circular residential roads, lined with 1960s bungalows set back in tiny gardens. One was called Crianlarich, with a garden filled with purple heather. I wondered what had brought the owners south from the scenic gateway to the highlands. Bungalows feel quintessentially British, like cups of tea or the royal family. I live in one myself, yet none of those things is native. As with much in British life, the humble bungalow is wrapped in the days of empire. The word bungalow comes from the Hindi bangla, meaning belonging to Bengal. It was used to describe colonial cottages in India. I remembered seeing some fine examples when walking through Kerala's forested hills. Settlers returned to Britain with enthusiastic memories of the Raj lifestyle and the charming homes they had lived in, and probably a fondness for tea and royalty too. The next circle of houses wasn't as affluent as the new builds by the station, nor retirement homes like the bungalows. This was the domain of the mid-tier commuter, successful but still striving, although the nearby train line into the city undoubtedly made the rows of semi-detached, mock Tudor homes eye-wateringly expensive. The streets were very fine and pleasant if you're after a fine and pleasant life, but I yearned to be back among mountains, ocean waves, rushing rivers, and the sort of people who gravitate to those places. Yet I also understood that there are 1,001 reasons why we can't all live in log cabins in Alaska, not even that small minority of the population who would actually want to. For those of us in that category, yearning to be free, appreciating the wildness that is around us is a better approach than lamenting what is not. Here in town, it was bin day, so there was a full wheelie bin or two lined up outside every home. We have an efficient system that whisks away our rubbish and recycling. But perhaps it's too efficient, because once it's out of sight, we forget all about its impact. British households produce 27 million tons of waste a year, more than 400 kilograms per person. A significant amount of that is spoilt food, as many families throw away up to 20% of their food, worth about £800 per year. If global food waste was a country, it would be the third largest greenhouse gas emitter. Every year, the world chucks out 2 billion tons of rubbish. Load that onto lorries and they'd lap the world 24 times. To highlight our wastefulness, activist Rob Greenfield lived like the average American for a month, but discarded nothing. Using a custom-made suit, he carried every piece of rubbish he generated everywhere he went. By the end of the month in New York, Rob was squeezing through doorways, struggling to pass subway barriers, and prompting conversation wherever he went. "Enough of houses and landfill and concrete streets," I cried to myself and pedaled on in search of something wild to soothe my soul. I found it, or the beginnings of it, in a park covered in trees, grass, and transitional scrub. 40 years ago, the area had been farmland, but it was now covered with an impregnable mesh of saplings and bushes, all self-sown and being allowed to develop naturally. Footpaths crisscrossed through the dense cover. I sat on a bench in a clearing and took stock of things. The motorway still roared beyond the wood, but it was a low, steady noise I could tune out, or pretend it was a waterfall. I looked around at the trees and blossom, listened to the birds, and remembered that it was the week of the spring equinox, when the hours of light and darkness are equal. Summer was on its way. For ancient people, the spring equinox was one of the year's most important markers. Everyone would have been so tuned in to the shifting of the seasons. Relatively speaking, we've only recently become so distanced from the natural world to live in indoor bubbles with regulated light and temperature. Communities used to celebrate the equinox with bonfires as they feasted on the last of the winter stores. It falls in the middle of a period known as the Hungry Gap, when little fresh produce is available, so a festival helped to raise famished spirits. This itch to welcome the spring became the pagan festival of Ostara, personified by the goddess of dawn and rebirth, a young woman surrounded by light, flowers, and fresh growth. It celebrated lighter days, new life, and renewed hope. Ostara's name came from the old German word for east, where the sun rises. Many of these rituals remain today at Easter, passed down to us through Celts, Saxons, and Romans, such as colourful eggs, rabbits, and baskets of sweets. The northern half of today's square was striped with tight contour lines and divided between a wood and housing development perched on the same hillside. Half the wood had been cleared to build the homes. I was interested to cycle around the houses on the bare hillside and then compare it with the woodland next door. We love woods, yet need houses. But we also need woods and can love our homes. The conflict of demands on our land was very apparent on that single hillside. The houses were, frankly, amazing. I had not seen so many lavish homes anywhere else on my map. There were footballer-style mansions behind high gates, painted clapboard houses such as you might find in an affluent American suburb, imitations of old rectories filled with Labradors and hockey sticks, and grand designs buildings that were all crisp, straight lines, massive plate glass windows and sans serif nameplates. They were fine homes, but I felt an unease as I pedalled along the quiet lane about the inherited inequalities on my map. the gulf in wealth between these residents and the poor estates of crowded tower blocks I'd ridden past to get here keeps being passed down from generation to generation. Why does our society obsess over measuring growth and wealth as the sole indicators of success? India has a booming economy measured in gross domestic product, but has shameful inequality and is one of the world's most depressed countries. Bhutan, on the other hand, scores poorly for GDP, but ranks highly for gross national happiness, which it values highly. Where do we want our priorities to lie? How should we measure our societies? Chasing growth, bigger houses, and ever more stuff to buy and bin is literally unsustainable on a planet of finite resources. As I cycled around, I recalled Kate Raworth's Donut Economics book. It emphasizes the need to balance our obsession with growth against quality of life for everyone and the Earth's environmental limits. Only in the middle of this donut can we find the ecologically safe and socially just space that society should aim for. Amen, I thought, and went off to have fun riding my bike around the woods.